Hello, welcome to Only God Rescued Me, My Journey from Satanic Ritual Abuse. I'm Lisa Meister, your host. And today we have Andrea. And Andrea is a mom who has lost two of her children in the family court system. And her children have gone through SRA, through their dad. And this is a horrific story, very difficult, but one that we really need to bring out. And thank you so much for joining us today, Andrea.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I'm very sorry. What's happened to your girls?
Me too. Thank you. But I truly believe this is a step to bring them back home. And not just to bring them back home, but to help many other children. So they can't be the only ones. So I thank you.
You're welcome.
And as you mentioned, it's hard, but I know that God called me to step into that. And so I would like other parents to come forward in Contra Costa County or Alameda County, which is where I have my oldest daughter's case. The two fathers, actually, her father had a restraining order against him for stalking and harassing. So he's not healthy. He still had visitation. He still had unsupervised visitation. He still has visitation now. She's scared to go still. My ex, the father of my youngest two, he was with me during the whole court battle with the father of my oldest. Front and center, he was the one speaking to my attorney. He saw that every 4 months he would take me back. He was not in compliance with his drinking. I mean, the system is so broken because when I got that restraining order for the stalking and harassing, it didn't stop. It just went through the attorney. He hired an attorney and then just every day would ask, what's your social security? What's just random, just stalking and harassing. And he saw my fight. He was there. He knew what type of mother I was. I didn't know he was taking notes to use it all against me.
So he learned how the court worked, mm-hmm, and how to play things.
Yes.
And use it against you.
Yes. And I had no idea. I didn't know at the time that he was either a narcissist or sociopath. I didn't know what a narcissist even was until after I left him. And then I learned it, and then I realized, oh my gosh, the father of my oldest daughter is one too. I didn't have the verbiage to, as silly as it seems, I didn't have the verb, you know, to say I was abused. You know, I could describe what was happening, and I knew it wasn't right. But it wasn't until 2014 that I was like, oh my gosh, the father of my oldest daughter is actually worse than the other one. You know, not that I should compare them, but I'll never forget when we went to the emergency ex parte for the restraining order. The mediator met with both of us, and then she came back and she said, don't ever get back with him. He's the craziest person I have ever met.
Wow.
He could not contact me unless it was 25 words or less written. Yet my daughter, she only had 3 months of supervised visitation, and then he got unsupervised. And of course, it was driven mostly by his parents, because I truly believe if they weren't in the picture, he would have just, well, he's actually told my daughter that if it wasn't for his parents, he would have left. So I want to call out, you know, the parents in Alameda County, because that's a failure. I have to let her go every 2 weeks, scared to go. He drinks. It's not a good situation, but it's better. But no child should have to grow. I mean, she's grown up normalized by abuse. She just told me today, she's actually home sick. She's not feeling well. She had these jeans on, and it's the style for the kids to put a shoelace and tie it back instead of a belt. And she and I said, "Do you want to use the belt that you just got?" And she said, "No." She said, "I like it like this." She said, "Why does it look bad?" I said, "No, of course not, because she's worn it like that before." She said, "Oh, because my dad said I look like trash."
Oh.
I'm sorry. And she said, "It's okay. I'm used to it." She said, "They always tell me that."
Oh.
And it's things that if you go to court, they wouldn't care about that, you know? But it's so
Yeah.
wrong. And it's for her, it's so normal. I mean, it's normal, and it shouldn't be because it's so damaging.
How old is she now?
She's 14, 14, and she'll be 15 in May.
So how old are your younger two daughters?
My middle daughter is 11, and my youngest is 10.
And how long has it been since you've seen them?
It has been on the 17th of this month. It will be 2 years and 7 months. No
So
contact.
they were 8 and 9 when they were taken away from
They
you?
They were 7 and 8.
7 and 8 when they
Yes.
were taken away. And they were telling you. They were old enough to tell you what was going on.
Oh, yes. They were very descriptive. It was a pattern. It wasn't just a one-time thing. They were telling me that they were telling me they would tell me that their father would, like I was telling you earlier, that I have the verbiage now when I saw Angie's podcast, but they would describe, they would always come home with bruises. They would come home with like cuts. It became very common, and I have pictures of all of this. And they would describe just being tormented, being like they had a big dogs that they would torment them with those, just have them instill them with fear. But then it escalated into sexual abuse with a minor that was 4 years older than them. And they were telling me this, that started with my middle daughter. And it wasn't a one-time thing. It was every time they would go over there. And finally it escalated to, she said that they went to a park. It was 2019, and it was before she came running out. When I picked her up, she had to go Wednesday to Thursday night. She came running out, and I knew something happened. And she said, "I don't never want to go back there. I don't want to go back." But she didn't tell me what happened until she was only 8. Until she would say, like, "What, you know, what day is it?" And I would tell her, when she realized that it was a day she had to go back to her father's, she said, "No, I can't." And then that's when she disclosed that their father had let them go alone to the park across the street, and that the minor that was four years older went to go meet her boyfriend there, and that the boyfriend abused her too, my daughter.
Oh, wow.
So that's when I finally called CPS, and it was, again, not for being neglectful. It's just I knew the kind of system I had been fighting in it since 2010 for my oldest daughter. I knew that you couldn't just call and, you know, disclose what they had been telling me, that they were almost drowned at times, that they were dangled over the, my youngest was dangled over the staircase, that she came, but my middle daughter came back with a concussion and her lip split right here. For times my youngest, she came back with this just completely bruised. She also had a concussion. And again, it was a pattern. It was a pattern of just neglect and torture. But the courts don't do anything. So when it escalated to this, that's when I called it in. But I had no idea the level of it until my daughters, they did forensic CICs. And my middle daughter, who she went in first, and she'll never forget, she came out with a bruise from her middle finger, from holding her face like that, from crying so hard. It was a little bit under 2 hours. She came out and she said, Mama, no, Mommy. She said, I told everything so that her younger sister wouldn't have to. And I said, Bob, it doesn't work that way. But that's the type of person she is. She truly believed that if I go above and beyond and disclose everything, as hard as it is for me, then her younger sister wouldn't have to do it. But she still did. And my youngest didn't disclose any. She said I didn't tell them that they touched my private part, but I told them everything else. So when I left the report, fast forward, that's when I disclosed, that's when I realized how bad it was. It wasn't just sexual abuse. It was my daughter disclosed they would ask where, and she said all over her body, our stomach, our, like, she circled every part of her body when they said, when does that minor child hurt them? And she said she just likes to. And they asked her, when does it happen? And she said, every time. This is quoted, and again, this is videotaped, so if minors counsel had subpoenaed the video, it's out there, it's ready to come out whenever. She literally disclosed every time we go over my dad's, she hurts us. She just likes to hurt us. They asked, have you seen her do it to your youngest sister? She said, yes, she does it all the time. She said, I know, because I'm there and I try to help her, but I can't because she's bigger than us. She was a lot bigger. She's 4 years older. But her father lied and said that she was only 2 years older. But of course, that's very easy to verify. And the thing was, when we were at the CIC, I went back to talk to the detective. And he said, you know, I don't think we have enough to press charges. And I said, oh, God, no. I said, I didn't intend on pressing charges with the minor child. I said, I want her to get help because she's learning it from somewhere. She's a child too. And that's when he told me, well, we just can't prove that it was for sexual gratification, because this day and age, she could have got into her parents' phone and looked at porn. And again, I just said, I want her to get help because she at the time was 12. And that's sincerely what I wanted. I mean, she had to have learned it from somewhere. And so I wanted to help her too. And obviously keep my daughter safe. But ultimately, it was their father's fault for not protecting them, you know? And so it came back, the report came back that although my middle daughter disclosed intentional touching of the private parts, that they couldn't prove per penal code, the list of the penal code, that it was for reasons of sexual gratification. And it's because of that, that it was inconclusive.
So there was the minor child hurting her. Did she also in this forensic interview talk about her dad hurting her or his girlfriend hurting her?
Not to my, she said that they're all mean to her. They all hurt her. All the adults, all of the teenagers were, let's see, they're 7, 8 years older than them.
Was the dad sexually abusing them?
No, they didn't disclose that. It was the minor that was 4 years older.
Did he disclose that? Did they disclose that to you?
Yes. And also, I mean, repeatedly. And then they disclosed it inside. Well, my middle daughter disclosed it in the forensic CIC. And that's where she disclosed more than she had disclosed to me. So I had just reported that they went to the park and they had been sexually abused. This minor child was abusing them. But that's where she circled every part of the body it said on there. And so somewhere that office has the drawings, you know, has the videotape of a little bit under 2 hours of her trying to get help, doing the right thing, doing what we raise our children to do, that if somebody hurts you, speak up.
And then they also disclosed SRA specific things to you as well.
Yes, they were horrified of Halloween. I didn't know about SRA until I found you in October or November, I think, through Megan Walsh, supernaturally. It was, but now I know that what they had been disclosing was SRA because they were petrified of Halloween. Like now that I know, you know, I wouldn't take my kids out trick or treat. I didn't know better, but we literally had to drive in two different cars because my middle daughter was so scared of my youngest daughter's kitty costume because I put whiskers on her. She was petrified, shaking. We had to go in two separate cars to drive to go trick or treating. Now I understand why it didn't. It wasn't just a normal fear, you know, it was not rational, you know. And then they disclosed, like I was telling you earlier, just, I remember one time in particular, it was a few days after my middle daughter's birthday. And she said that she was given $20 and she wanted to buy these little beads that you put together and then you spray water over them and they adhere and you can like make penguins, make unicorn, make all kinds of different things. She said that she wanted to buy that, but then she had to end up buying, she had to end up buying hers and her youngest and her younger sister's backpacks for school because their father wouldn't provide it. And she said, I was very sad, Mama. She said, but Abby helped me. She said, but that her younger sister let her hold the bag and was trying to comfort her. So I took her out. And I gave her the $20 and I said, pick out what you wanted to get. You know, we went, three of us. But the bigger point of that is that she had disclosed then that numerous times they tried to drown them. That she helped my youngest daughter. She said, I had to jump in and save her because they were trying to drown her. And I said, why? And they said, they just like to be mean to us. And that my youngest said that she was dangled over the staircase. And they just like everything came out. Like, I couldn't believe it. They're like, they run after us with scissors. I was like, why? They're like, they just like to be mean to us. They try to cut our hair. They in fact did end up cutting their hair, but not just like a regular, it like was maliciously done to where you could tell like they would just cut part of it off. They would have just like scratches and things on their back. And then I have pictures of. They would describe being constantly hungry. You know, everybody else was eating and they couldn't eat. So now I know that it was programming to normalize them being traumatized, you know, but they would come home and say, we're so hungry. And then just in talking, I was, you know, you didn't eat. No, they were all eating. We had to sit there and watch them. Then they disclosed also the killing of numerous guinea pigs, like numerous. I didn't know. Obviously, I knew it wasn't right, but I didn't know what it all entailed. And just, I mean, and the name calling and the sleep is another important one. They would come back and tell me, we only slept like an hour. Of course, I don't know that they couldn't tell time, you know, but that's probably what it felt like to them. They would describe, we were forced to sleep in the bed, and they would name all of the children. They would say, so-and-so was here, we were here, I was here. And then the other child was here, and then there was a 41-year-old male. And I was like, why was he sleeping in there? I don't know. I said, how do you know he was 41? He said, I'm 41 like your dad. I'm like, Dada. And I wrote all of this down, and I turned it into minors counsel because I would write it with the date and what they disclosed to me. Again, I didn't know at the time. I was like, why is this happening to my daughters? You know, I have a picture of them in bed sleeping with another minor child. This was when the minors counsel was investigating for the sexual abuse. And I disclosed to her, I said, my children are telling me that they are forced to sleep with another child in the bed. She wrote it on the report. I proved it to her. She never attached the proof. So she made it seem like basically that I was just crazy making and saying that they, you know, they only slept an hour and that they were forced to sleep with somebody else, but I was making up stories, but I have the proof still.
Well, that's what's so crazy is when you are advocating what your children are telling you and they use that against the mom who's advocating for the child.
Yes.
To say that you're crazy.
Yes.
It's like, I am just telling you what my kids are saying.
Yes.
And they will not listen and they will not protect. And you've got bruising, you've got wounds on the child that you are documenting. You've got forensic evidence where they're going and giving crying evidence of them being hurt. And she's even bruising her face by pushing her hands into this. And they don't even listen to it. Like nobody even listened to what she had to say.
No, it was. And again, it's a pattern because it's, you could see like with him, his behavior just got it. What it does is it makes him bolder because they're not held accountable. So he would literally fight. If I said, you know, my middle daughter had one time, she had an ear infection. She can't swim for 2 weeks. You know, this is what the doctor said. She needs to be put drops. It was like, he did it on purpose. He was like, just so that you know that it took her swimming, so you might have to put extra drops. Or like the medication, if I would send it, not administer it. And just blatantly, I would take pictures of the inhaler when she had it, like he had the documentation saying she had croup, she had bronchitis. He would take her out to get her nails done, like purposely. When she was sick, she got worse. This inhaler she had since she was 18 months, since we were together, the spacer. Well, when I actually, everything, I had to document so much for the most, with the counter, this is what I sent it with. You know, this is what it came back with. She should have needed a refill. You know, she wasn't treated properly. It was neglect. I didn't use that word. I just said, you know, she wasn't administering her medication properly. Now she's worse. Well, he turned around and said that he had no idea that she even had an inhaler. I was like, what? Like, she was diagnosed with asthma. I submitted from the Google Hangout, where I texted him from the office saying, she just got diagnosed with asthma. She has to get an inhaler. And he's like, oh no. So I have that. I have the original box, submitted all of that. They're like snakes.
They use that against you in the court.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did it, you know, because he had to go so far to prove that he was right. So he made an appointment with the pulmonologist, but there's no test for asthma. And I never claimed that she had it severe. It was just when she was sick. But he pulled her out of school. I was trying to go with him to the appointment so we can clarify it up, which was something I didn't want to do, but for her best interest, I wanted to go. He said that I refused to go to any appointments with him. When I tried, and I have the emails of saying I called to reschedule, he put the appointment back for the day, pulled her out of school without telling me, and didn't return her. Her backpack and her lunch was like a 10 o'clock appointment. They were supposed to be back. I went to go, you know, see her, and her teacher said she didn't come back. So I emailed him and I said, where's our daughter? You know, why didn't she go back? Nothing. Didn't email me back. So then the next day I texted him and nothing. So then I called the police because I was like, I had no idea if, God forbid, something happened to them on the road. And so I did a welfare check. Again, proof, I had the email from 3 o'clock the day before, the text from that morning. And then he emails me that basically I'm crazy. Why am I accusing him? The girls are fine. They're right there with him eating breakfast, that he's going to have his lawyer pull his phone records and prove that he never once called me, and that I never once called him, that I never emailed him, when it's very verifiable. I sent the email again. I was like, this is the email. So just all twisted into, like, I'm crazy.
And what did they use against you in court? What was the reasons that they gave custody to him?
They said the minors counsel, Barbara Scramstan, she alleged that I coached my daughters or indoctrinated them. But the reason that they were taken is actually, it's more sinister, because there isn't a psychological evaluation to test to see if a parent coaches. First of all, that the rate of a parent falsely raising allegations of abuse is like 2%. And out of that 2%, fathers are 16% more likely, 16 times more likely, excuse me, to make the false allegations. So they had, she suggested a psychological evaluation to see if and why I had coached the children. Such a test doesn't exist. There just isn't one. Again, there's proof to that, you know. And so when I raised that to my attorney, they changed the verbiage so that they could do the psych evaluation, saying, you know, to see if I have any mental illness. It was coercion to, like, because I didn't know at the time, I trusted my attorney. I didn't know that there wasn't such a psych evaluation, so I agreed to it. Now I know, now I see that what they were trying to do was to pin something on me to say, you know, it came back with this. That way they can say it was justified that they took my children. Well, what happened was they were taken during the pandemic. So I didn't start the psych evaluation because it was like $2,500. Of course, he already paid for it, for his half. But they allowed the trial to go on the 17th of July, knowing that it didn't start the psych evaluation, knowing what my concerns were, knowing that they met and they conferred without me to change the verbiage for this psych evaluation. I still have the emailing my attorney, Pamela Maricini, and I found out that 85% of parents in California that protect their children against abuse lose custody. And I have it written when I said, Pamela, please don't let me be part of that 85%. There's so much proof. And she wrote something to the effect of, I told you it would be problematic if you raised allegations of abuse. Wow. It's just such, so they allowed it to go on the trial, and the social worker testified that my middle daughter, she disclosed being touched inappropriately, and that she disclosed being hit and hurt all over the body, and that she didn't think that I coached her. And so when we took a break for lunch, I thought it was going well. I went upstairs to see my daughters and I said, it's going really good. You're going to get to stay, because they were telling me we're not going to see you again. I said, that's not true. They said, yeah, Dad's telling us we're not going to see you again. I said, no, that will never happen. I trusted the system. So when I saw it going well, because she was the first witness and she spoke the truth of the report, I went upstairs and I was like, it's going well. You're going to be safe, you know? You're going to be protected. They had the mediator when we came back. They started without me. They had the mediator. They made her into an expert. They did some sort of, I have no idea. It turns out now when I looked that you can't, there's like some kind of process where they literally made her an expert right there by asking her a few questions. She's not, she's a mediator. So they made her a 730 expert. She took a treatment summary that was over 2 years old from my youngest daughter, saying that that she was being forced to split her loyalties between the two parents. And so the judge, she took away custody, saying that I was perpetuating allegations of abuse that were proven to be false numerous times, which was not true. There was just the one investigation, which was inconclusive.
Wow.
And she said that she has evidence that I'm perpetuating false allegations, and it's proven by the fact that I was there at that trial, and that I am projecting to my children that they're not safe with their father when they are. So there's not even anything against me. They don't have any mental illness. There's no way to prove that there was coaching. So what they wrote on the court order is so that they can develop at age appropriate levels. They had to give custody to one parent, so they gave it to him. And the sickening part is that I have documentation now that my middle daughter, they took her to the pediatrician and said that she is acting not age appropriate. She is acting, she watches cartoons that are younger than her, that she's not touching other children. I have no idea why. I have the medical record. But basically what they had said was going to happen under my care. It's like they froze at that when they were taken.
How were you able to get this report?
Thankfully, I made an account before they were taken, and he took them to that same pediatrician because he's completely used the system to erase me. He won't update me about anything. I had to in that he even fought. I reached out to the doctor, and he was like, I have to check with the father because he has sole legal, but it still says I have access to the medical records. But he fights me on everything. When I try to get access to the school records, it's a fight. It's like I'm not their mother. He will not let me know anything. And he's painted this picture that they're essentially from his, that I coached them, that they were safe, that I was just doing it as a way to get custody, which is not true. I think, like I mentioned, he was actually by my side when I was fighting to protect my oldest daughter from her father. And his mom saw what I went through, and I have emails of her saying, I'm so sorry for what you have to go through with my oldest daughter's father. I didn't know he was taking notes, you know, just seeing how the system was. And so it baffles me that his mom and his stepdad, knowing the kind of mother I am, knowing that it was not true that I tried to take custody from the father, I had a restraining order for stalking and harassing against him. It was so strict. He had a right. He could only contact me 25 words or less. Written. And again, she saw all this, and it just baffles me that she's never once reached out and said, what's really going on? I have emails and texts when we had problems in our marriage, when I would find out that he was lying. She told me that he had a pathological lying problem since high school. She doesn't know what's wrong with him, that she hopes he gets help. She's so disappointed in him. Two emails, numerous texts. So she knows, she's enabling. She knows what type of father he is. And they're all complicit. They're all complicit.
So do you feel that the lawyer was ever on your side? Was ever for you or for your girls?
I believe that, or she was my third attorney for that case. She's not a good attorney. I don't believe that she was against me, but I don't believe either that she was for me, because when he had the previous attorney, Matthew Oliveri, that was somebody, I guess, that she, I don't know if she went to school with him or had some kind of a reputation, but they got along. And so the trial before the one in 2020, which was 2018, September 26th, the judge saw there, he got called up first. And she stopped it within an hour because she saw all of his lies. She saw his abuse, that he would do things such as, like, he would make vacations impossible. Like, every time I requested time, he would deny it. Or he would, like, one thing he did to our daughter was, I requested 2 months ahead of time to have her for her birthday weekend for a vacation. And the day before, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he texted me and he said, oh, I just saw your email. And since it's my priority year, I'm going to deny it. So I hope you do the right thing and you don't let her down by having her miss her birthday party. He involved the attorneys. It ended up being thousands of dollars. I ended up still being able to take my vacation. But it's all done on purpose, like to ruin every holiday, to ruin vacations. There was a time we went to Disneyland that I told him ahead of time, and that he hoped I wasn't disobeying court orders. There was no disobeying. It was my vacation time, but it was literally like he still used it. That used the system and used co-parenting as a way to control me. And he called the cops that time. And I was like, so I'm over here driving to Disneyland having to figure it out with the cops when all of it is made up. So back to, this was the prior judge. So she saw the reality of it. She stopped the trial. It was supposed to be a 2-day trial. I didn't have to take the stand. She stopped it and she basically said, I don't want you guys in here anymore. This is what my attorney said. And she made it to where we had to do parallel co-parenting. And that is where when one parent is abusive, they make them go to co-parenting, but it's different. Like, so the mom will go one day and the dad goes another day. They don't go together. He had to pay for it. It was all at his expense because he drove the conflict. Of course, he never did that. He never fulfilled that because he liked the co-parenting in person so that he can bully me, so that he can, you know, use it to further harass me. And then she made every exchange to be at school so it wouldn't have to be at the house anymore too, so that there wouldn't be any more conflicts, because he would make it, he had a routine of just not showing up or calling, you know, 5 minutes before. He would do whatever he wanted with the schedule. I had messages of, you know, they were due home at 6 and, oh, we decided to stop by and see this baby, or, oh, we're stuck in traffic, or my car's not working, you have to come pick him up. Just a constant, like, just torture with this. You know, he did whatever he wanted. So we had that court order, and it did go better. You know, we did the exchanges at school. We never did the parallel co-parenting. But that's when it escalated to the sexual abuse. And I truly believe it's almost like all the doors were open for him, because that's when Linda Lai, the new judge, came in. She didn't know our history. She appointed minors counsel, and she went off of minors counsel's report, because what they do in family court is they're called the experts. So what she should have done was ordered a 3118, family law code 3118, to investigate if the abuse had actually happened. But no, she just accused me of coaching my daughters. Sorry.
You're fine. Take a moment.
Yeah. I guess the main thing I want to say was it should never have escalated to this. It's so, I hesitate to say easy of a case, but it really is. You know, if you just sat down and looked, there's years of neglect, of medical neglect, of everything he accused me of, except I have the evidence, stacks of evidence that I'm confident I will get to use one day. I mean, because this man, what he did, he made me jump through hoops, I mean, through persecuting me for everything he did. Except, like I said, I'm the one holding all the evidence. I was like, they had it absolutely right had they flipped the script. And just with the attorney's mouth. So,
his attorney fought hard for him.
Oh, yeah. She was the high powered one.
And your attorney did not.
No. No. She was the high powered. He changed attorneys when my daughter disclosed the sexual abuse. When they did the CIC, that's where he dropped the previous attorney and hired this high power one, Amy Hilton.
So where do you get the money for this?
I believe probably his grandmother, who has passed away since, because that's who he was asking for. He had a pattern of going to see his mother and grandmother before court.
Do you think the SRA was going on all the way through?
Yes, but I don't think to that level. But after my daughter had disclosed, my 8-year-old, it came out just after she had disclosed it, that this had been happening. The first time it happened at the previous home on her birthday, during her birthday party. And I had no idea, but she clearly remembered. And she just didn't, it made her feel so sick that she was nauseated. She felt like throwing up. And that was the first time, and then it started happening. Every time there was a pattern of, they had a bunch of kids over all the time. And I just thought, you know, a lot of friends, or but that there was always a lot of people over their house. Like a lot. And it was, my daughters would come back home and just disclose all kinds of names, and they were different all the time. There wasn't a consistent, like, I get having friends and stuff, but it was like, you know, JJ and this one and that. And that, I'm like, I couldn't keep up with who all the adults were, who all the children were, who, so I do believe, because like I was telling you how scared they were with Halloween, with how they came home almost every time with bruises, and just not just like one, it's not the way he tried to play it, is, you know, they're kids, things are going to happen. Yes, I get that. But not so much.
Right.
And not what they were saying, like that the older kids, the teenagers, would just trip them on purpose, would just hit them on purpose. Why? Because they want to. Because they want to. They like hurting us. Their dad would call them a bitch. Right? I have writings of my youngest saying, I feel sad, mommy, because dad called me a bitch. Kids don't lie like that.
No, they don't.
And she would say, she would write, can I do the sensory bin? She loved doing a sensory bin that I made for her. So many writings like that that I didn't ever turn in, because then they would have said, oh, you made them write it, you know? But kids don't. I mean, they've even given it to my oldest daughter. They've written her notes saying, I feel like this, and drew a picture of them crying.
Yeah.
And asking for a hug. So she knows as well, because she's, like I said, she's almost 15. She's, from what they have, just, they never outright told her, but they would, it was just like unknown that they weren't treated well. And they would, she has literally notes of my middle daughter saying, I feel like this, can you give me a hug? And it was a person crying. They would all have conversations about their respective fathers and what they had to go through.
Yeah.
And so now, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the two fathers colluded. And so the father of my oldest daughter keeps telling her that I'm lying, that I coached my children. But she knows, my daughter knows, because she has lived. She's lived it. She's seen my daughters come back with, like I said, concussions, with bruises, with every time with saying they weren't fed, that they were hungry, that they were kicked, they were punched, they were, their father hit my youngest with a pan. And I said, why? And she said, I didn't, wasn't in trouble or anything, but he just hit me in the back of the head with a pan. And I said, why? And she said, because he wanted to. She disclosed that to CPS. I never disclosed it. I didn't know about it. When she came back and told me, she goes, I told the mom that dad hit me with a pan. I said, what? And she said, yeah, he did. Because they didn't know what they had told me, what they had not, you know, but this really happened to them. And so how can you go and gaslight a child, you know, to minimize my daughter, like to say that I'm a horrible mom. And the sickening part too is that the father of my oldest daughter has for years accused me of medical neglect. The father of my two youngest daughters accused me of Munchausen by proxy. And I was talking to minors counsel and I said, look at the both fathers. One accuses me of this and one accuses me of the complete opposite. And she said, oh, you can't win either way. I said, no. I said, but it can't be both, right? Is it medical neglect or is it medical abuse? And she literally said, she said, you can't win either way. I said, no. And she came in to when I met her the first time. She said, anyone know, think that Amy Hilton is going to subpoena the CIC, the videotape forensic CIC? And I said, oh God, no, I hope not. Because I didn't want to see it. I didn't know that it would be to my benefit. I was just, my instinct was like, no, I don't want to see that. I didn't want it played in the trial. And I told her what I had told you. I said, oh God, no. I said, I hope not. I said, because my middle daughter was a little bit under 2 hours. She had a bruise from this finger from crying. And I repeated the words to her. I said, she came out and said, mommy, that her sister didn't have to say anything because she told everything. And I said, it doesn't work that way, Bob. You know, but thank you. You're so brave. And my youngest went and she came out and she told me she didn't disclose being touched inappropriately in her private part. So she was reading me to see if I was going to subpoena that forensic CIC. And she knew I wouldn't. So then by the time I had another consultation, when I saw that my attorney was working against me, and they said, you need to get a copy of that. You need to get it subpoenaed. I asked her, she said, no, I don't want anything to come out against you. So that doesn't even make sense, because even if it was something against me, minors counsel would have subpoenaed it if it was at all in the father's favor. Like, how did she not even look at it? Part of what she was supposed to do in her investigation was review the CPS records.
Which makes you wonder, she was paid off, you know, to not do her job.
Oh yeah. Or,
you know,
right.
And you don't know. It's possible.
It is. It's possible. It is. And I think more than that, who would want to go up against an abuser in the type that he is? He's for $1,000. She got paid $1,000 total. So while she was on the case, she makes $400 an hour private practice. I know she saw the truth. She claimed that she did 43 hours of investigation. There's so many verifiable inaccuracies. I mean, she accused me of the medical records of my daughters having five times the medical records that they do. I have their medical records. I have all of them. She claimed that my daughters started seeing that pediatrician in 2014. They went to that pediatrician since they were born. I have the actual records. Some, not all of them, obviously, but from their well visits, from my youngest daughter with special needs. So her GI appointments and everything that I had disclosed in the first declaration when I requested sole legal and sole physical custody because my youngest daughter had special needs. Her father never took care of them. I have letters from the physical therapist, from the pediatrician, from the chiropractor, saying that I was the sole parent they ever dealt with. He never showed up to any appointments. My dad would go with me. She had weekly weight checks. She had speech therapy, occupational therapy. And she's my little miracle because she, with all the work that my dad did, with all the work that a lot of the specialists did, she turned out to be, when she was in TK, she was a year ahead. And so she was a year ahead until she left my custody. In first grade, she was doing second grade work. In TK, she was doing kindergarten. I have the report cards of, she knew like all of the high frequency words before, like she was so bright. She was doing gifted and talented work, like extra work. She would turn it in kindergarten to her teacher. I still have the binders made up. She was supposed to keep working from those. She loved it. She liked it because the other work was so easy for her. You know, she would say, this is so simple. But now she's still at second grade level. Now she's behind, and she should be. Now she's in fourth grade. She should be in fifth grade level. She's still at second grade level.
So what was the reason for giving you no visitation whatsoever?
I believe that it was coercion because I believe that they were thinking that I was in a run to go do the psych evaluation. And then they would falsely diagnose me with something. And then once you have that diagnosis, which is what they tend to do in family court, you can't get your children back. You're unsupervised for the rest of their lives. Because again, they're not experts. They're just court appointed. They're all part of the same court appointed ring. And so they could have come back with, I'm sure they probably already had the diagnosis of what they were going to say. And then the family court tries to, you know, what they portray is, you can bring in your own expert. And yes, you can. You could bring in five experts, but the judge has the power to say, to listen to all of them and say, okay, thank you, I'm going to go with this one.
Right.
And there's no accountability.
Right.
It's just the judge. It's just the judge to, a judge can listen to five experts and then say, it's not abuse.
Yeah.
Despite the documentation, they have that much power. They think they're God. I mean, they abuse their power.
Yeah.
And people need to know that. They think like I did, you know, the justice system, they're fair. No, these people, it literally is that bad. That's essentially what the judge did, is she listened to the evidence and said, I don't believe it's abuse. And I've heard that so many, every day I meet mothers that have lost custody.
Yeah.
They just refuse to accept the evidence, or they'll review it and say, I don't believe it's abused. They have way too much power. What needs to be done is it has to be taken away from them. Like, you know, when they have the jury.
Yeah.
That, or transparency. Because even, or cameras in court is another one, because I've had things that the judge has said not appear in the transcripts, and the transcripts to buy them are hundreds of dollars. And then wow. When you get them, it's like, okay, she said that, you know,
so stuff's missing.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Right. So I believe, back to your question, was they thought I was going to run out and go get it. But that's when God enlightened me. And I was like, no, they're up to something, because there wasn't a psych evaluation for what they initially ordered. And they still stuck with them. Oh, I almost left out the biggest part. They said that for me to do the psych evaluation, I could only take the mediator's report and Miners Council's report. Those two things. And I was not allowed to see the results of the psych evaluation. And on the front of the envelope with the results, the evaluator had to write the two reports that she reviewed and initial it. I couldn't open it, which is against due process. I should be able to open it. And then I could start supervised visitation. So not even knowing what would come back on that. But the thing with that is Miners Council omitted the abuse, and so did the mediator's report. So they said, I can only go and do the psych evaluation with those two tests, nothing else. So not the CPS report, the 27 page that contained the abuse. What, I mean, it doesn't take, it's not conspiracy theory. You can just think, okay, that's obviously not fair. That's not a fair shake.
To set up.
You know, you're saying, take these two that don't contain the abuse. She has to initial that. That's all she did. Of course, she's going to come back that the abuse didn't happen, that it was coaching. So it's coercion. There's no way around it. There's no way to do it. And I had to hear abuse from my attorney, from Pamela Maricini, that what kind of mother am I? That if I was a good mother, I would have went and done the evaluation. I can't explain to her. I can't. It's how you guys are setting me up. And for the benefit of my children, I can't go do it. I mean, it'd be foolish to say.
And your own lawyer isn't even standing in for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't afford to go get a different lawyer.
Well, now nobody will touch it. I've had consultations with a bunch, but now because of how messed up it is, I think, or most importantly, I think because they know, you know, that this is what happens in court, that if a protective parent's alleged abuse, verifiable abuse, they get custody taken. And so there's no way to flip it. It's just what they're known for doing. And like I said, in California, it's 85%. So now they won't touch the case. I tried to get attorneys, but no.
Wow.
So I gave, I surrendered to God. I put it in his hands that it has to be for something bigger, for something a lot bigger. Because there is no co-parenting with their father. There is, if there was any dispute as to if there was abuse or not, now my daughter, I didn't tell you this, my middle daughter is in the 1 percentile for weight. She's lost 4 pounds since she left 2 years and 7 months
ago. Wow.
She was the child that suffered the most of the abuse. She was the child that disclosed most of the abuse. She was essentially the scapegoat.
Yeah.
All her life. So now she's 4 pounds less. And that was September of 2021, I think, was the last time I was able to obtain medical records. I have therapeutic records that they were diagnosed with adjustment disorders. How could they not, you know, given the situation, adjustment disorders with anxiety and depression? I fear for their safety. The only thing that keeps me going is that my faith in God, that God, he did not make it get this bad to not bring them back home. But my middle daughter was already hurting herself. She was cutting her legs. Mm. She was in second grade.
Oh.
And then I had her promise that she wouldn't hurt herself anymore. The first time she did was when she was learning about money. She said she was really frustrated with herself because she didn't know, like, the paper money that was on the math worksheet, that she just couldn't get it right. And so she said, "Mommy, I want to show you this." She ripped her paper, and then she cut herself on her legs. And I said, "Well, that's because you can't really tell what the denominations are. It's hard to see." So I said, "I'm going to show you how to count money, okay?" I said, "You're going to be able to." I said, "It's not you. It's the picture."
Yeah.
So I had got a little Ziploc with coins and with dollar bills. And every day she'd keep a paper. I'd give her just random coins, and it's be you have to you can only keep it after you count it. And she learned how to count. Very smart girl. She's a hands-on learner. And so she was excelling with me because I knew how to help her out, you know, wherever school fell short. I knew what type of learner she was. And I have a memory of up in the playroom. When minors council got assigned, and the judge had told me that I can't disclose any more abuse because if I did, I would lose custody. And they were still telling me they were getting abused. I remember vividly my middle daughter was in the rocking chair. I was in there with her. And she said, "Mommy, I need help. I need a lot of help." Crying. And I said, "I'm going to get you help. I'm going to get you help." She said, "Please, I need a lot of help." And that's when she made the promise that she wouldn't hurt herself. That was March of 2020, and then she was taken in July. So I told God, "You remember that. You remember that. God remembers that. You have to bring them back safely." Because I've tried everything. No, I haven't done the psych evaluation. But I can tell you why. Like I said, it's a setup. It's for their own best interest. I cannot.
I agree with you on that.
It's coercion.
If I was in your shoes, I wouldn't be able to do that either, because that would be signing them over to them
for good
for the next 7 years.
And then they would make it a permanent order.
Yeah.
And there'd be nothing to change it. So I'm hoping if the Holy Spirit somehow this lands in the eyes of my daughters, I want them to know that they did the right thing, that I did the right thing. The system failed them. A lot of people that were supposed to protect them failed them. I believe everything that they've told me. I've never given up on them. No, I didn't do the psych evaluation, but it was a setup. They know that I didn't coach them. They know the truth. They know what they've lived. They know who failed to protect them.
Yeah.
And I hope that this does reach them so that they know I love them very much. They didn't do anything wrong. My parents love them. I miss them so much. Their older sister loves them and misses them so much. They haven't answered their calls because it's what's best for them. We know what it would be with their father on the other end saying, "Say this or don't say this." Or I know that they were forced to call. I know that they wouldn't want us to answer, but I just wanted to say that it wasn't that we didn't answer because we didn't love them. It was we did what was best for them, because most times my youngest, when I told you that her father didn't return them back from the pulmonary appointment. And I got to talk to her, and she whispered, "I love you, mommy." When she came home the next day, she said, "I'm sorry I whispered." She said, "Everybody was making fun of me for saying that I love you." Mm. So why, how would we even answer the phone, you know, and put the children through that? Imagine, yeah. Like, so I do believe this will be worked out. They have big purposes. Of course, no parent wishes this, you know, I don't wish this for them. But I believe this step, I want them to know I didn't want to do this. I'm not trying to spread what they disclosed to me, but God told me to do it. And I believe this is another step in bringing them home and having other children be protected as well.
Yeah. And you're also now advocating. Do you want to tell us what you do in Change Family Court?
Yes, I'm advocating for transparency and accountability in family court. I don't know quite where God's going to take me, but I know that he's put me sort of in this leader role, because I've had quite a few moms now that I've helped along the way, and that I'm very grateful I've been able to use this. And so now it's getting more and more attention. But I just want to call out the parents from Contra Costa County, from Alameda County. And if they have suffered anything like this, any injustices from Barbara Scram's dad, was the minors counsel, Amy Hilton, Pamela Maricini, that was my attorney, and she's temporarily closed. So there has to be something there. Judge Linda Lai, I've reached out to Gavin Newsom because he appointed her to a new position at California EPA. A judge doesn't retire after 2 years. You know, she retired. And so now she has a new career. So I reached out to him, no response. So I'm just trying to gather parents, and I don't know where exactly this is going to lead, but like you were saying, my hope is a major lawsuit for failure to protect these children, for destroying their childhoods, and so many that have lost their lives.
Yeah.
And so just whoever I can help in Contra Costa, in Alameda, or anywhere else, and anybody with this story, just to know you're doing the right thing. Your children are going to forever hold on to the fact that you believe them and you did the right thing. The system failed them. So
if people should follow you, because you put up a lot of good content on your sites. So where can they find you?
They could find me at Change Fam Court. So Change, CHANGEFAM Court, CORT, on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter. And that is my email, changefamcourt@gmail.com.
Okay. And so go follow Andrea. You'll be glad that you did. I see a lot of good stuff that she's got up there all the time. And pray for her family. Reunification, yes, with her kids.
Thank you. Thank you, and Lisa.
You're welcome. When we did the baby memorial, you know, it was you that asked, can we include the kids that in the family court system that need to come back? And it's like, absolutely. And I was really glad that you brought that up.
Thank you. That was beautiful. That was so powerful.
Yeah.
So yeah. Powerful. I think I told you I watched it again this past weekend.
Yeah.
So it gives me hope. It gives me the strength to keep going.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, I had to go watch it as a spectator, which is a very different than being, you know, the moderator of it. So it was a way different. It was harder to run it. It was hard to watch it. They're both hard.
Yes. It was very both heavy. Were hard.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very.
But you had Rosie, is that her name?
Rosie. Yes.
Yeah. She was helping you, thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah. It was heavy. So I think I made it through 8 names, maybe. We had over 100. So I'm like, I can't do this. I'm not. Because was, every yeah. name, every name.
And there was,
so many. Yeah. It's like.
So many.
Like, oh so boy. Sad. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for bringing in all the kids in family court. I hadn't thought of that, but absolutely. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
They're, yeah, they are definitely stuck in the Luciferian kingdom.
Yeah. So are you willing to pray the shaking of the Luciferian prayer with me?
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. So repeat after me.
Okay.
From where we're seated in Christ Jesus.
From where we're seated in Christ Jesus.
At the right hand of the Father.
At the right hand of the Father.
The Lord God Almighty says.
The Lord God Almighty says.
The time has come.
The time has come.
For the Luciferian kingdom.
For the Luciferian kingdom.
To be shaken.
To be shaken.
We decree.
We decree.
Let the great shaking.
Let the great shaking.
Of all who worship Lucifer begin.
Of all who worship Lucifer begin.
Your sorceries and sacrifices.
Your sorceries and sacrifices.
Will not help you.
Will not help you.
Your protection is removed.
Your protection is removed.
Let the shaking.
Let the shaking.
Of the Luciferian kingdom increase.
Of the Luciferian kingdom increase.
In Jesus' name, amen.
In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for coming on, Andrea. I know it was really hard.
Yes, and this is my first podcast, my first time disclosing all of it. So I thank you. And
well, I hope you get a lot more interviews.
For being patient because I know it was fragmented. And
well, the first times you go through this, it is. It's hard to
right
live it and stuff. Yeah, it's tough. And you did a good job.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome. God bless you.
God bless you too.